Over our Game of Thrones summer series, we have worked our way through the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, filled with plots and palace intrigues that have kept our heads spinning. Let me sum up. In an age of chaos, a woman named Hannah prayed for a child. That son, Samuel, grew to be the last of the judges and the Merlin-like kingmaker for the people of Israel. First, King Saul was raised up. He led the people for a time, but proved to be more concerned with what he could see before him than with the will of God. He trusted in his own strength and the strength of his army rather than in the Lord's faithfulness. Then came David. Anointed by Samuel in secret, he was feared and hunted by King Saul. But with the death of Saul and Saul's sons in battle with the Philistines, David then ascends to the throne. He's a good king for a time. But he becomes too comfortable, and even he falls prey to the corruption of power. He takes Bathsheba. And when she becomes pregnant, he has her husband Uriah killed to cover the deed. But God sees and calls him out through the prophet Nathan. David is broken and confesses his guilt. The sin of David carries consequences, though. And while he continues to subdue the enemies of Israel abroad, trouble comes from within. David has many wives and many sons. The eldest, Amnon, rapes his half-sister Tamar. Her brother, another of David's sons named Absalom, plots and kills Amnon in retaliation. Absalom then orchestrates a coup and takes the throne from David. David eventually regains the throne, and one of his generals, against David's orders, kills Absalom. That leaves David's son Adonijah the next in line. And indeed, as David ages and his end appears near, Adonijah begins preparing to rule. But there are plots and counterplots by Nathan and Bathsheba and others. The old king David dies, and in the end, it is his youngest son, Solomon, who sits on the throne. So ends the tale of David, the story of Samuel, the story of the rise and fall of Saul. So this week we will conclude our Game of Thrones with an epilogue, if you will. A story of the young Solomon seated on David's throne with big shoes to fill. This is where our series will end for now. But of course, the story doesn't end. The story doesn't end. It continues through the rise and fall of other kings and other kingdoms. It continues through the birth of a child in Bethlehem, in the line of David, a new kind of king, proclaiming a new kind of king entirely. But today, we are with Solomon in Gibeon. So Solomon the king went up to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the principal high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on the altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I should give you." And Solomon said, "You have shown great and steadfast love to your servant, my father David, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart toward you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love, and have given him a son to sit on his throne today. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, although I am only a little child. I don't know how to go out or to come in. And your servant is in the midst of the people whom you have chosen, a great people, so numerous they cannot be numbered or counted. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, able to discern between good and evil. For For who can govern this, your great people? It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. And God said to him, because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding, wisdom to discern what is right, I now do according to your word. Indeed, I give you a wise and discerning mind. No one like you has been before you, and no one like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you did not ask for, both riches and honor all your life. No other king shall compare with you. If you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your life. Then Solomon awoke. It had been a dream. He came to Jerusalem where he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. He offered up burnt offerings and offerings of well-being and provided a feast for all his servants. To my knowledge, no one in my immediate family has ever raised chickens. But somewhere along the way, my folks seem to have learned a whole lot about chicken farming. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, my mother used to say. Or don't count your chickens before they're hatched. Sometimes, if I was giving her a particularly hard time, my mom would look at me and say, someday the chickens will come home to roost. She always gave me kind of an ominous look as she said this one and mumbled something about how she couldn't wait until I had kids of my own. Now I understand. Some of these phrases, they might have picked up here and there, but some of them, I think they just made up themselves. If you keep your mouth shut and your ears open, you just might learn something, Mom would always say. Take your time, but do it fast, was one of my dad's favorites. They taught me to pay attention to janitors and secretaries, get to know them, mostly because they're human beings, but also because they run the world. Dad gave me a lot of advice about the value of waking up early and getting to work. Sometimes he would back up his advice with these little object lessons, you know, helpful teaching moments. Like the morning he asked me if I wanted a cup of water. I took this as a sign of the coming of a kinder and gentler era in our morning routine. I was, of course, mistaken. I realized that I had failed to be very specific about just how I would like that cup of water when I felt the cold drink being poured on my face. I was out of bed before Dad got back with the complimentary second glass. Chores could be a trying moment in the Latimer house growing up. I used to get this one a lot. If you spent half the time working that you've already spent complaining about the work, you would have been done an hour ago. It wasn't until college that I started to appreciate my parents' wisdom. An exceptionally messy roommate my freshman year taught me the value of cleanliness that my parents had preached all along. And I remember being an RA in the dorm, trying to get my guys to clean their rooms before they left. You see, if I checked them out before their rooms were actually clean, then I got to do the cleaning, and that was very motivating. I remember one guy whose room was a wreck. There was crud all over the floor. I told him he needed to clean it before I could sign off on his room. I left the room. I heard the vacuum come on. It may have moved. He called me back in. The floor was still a mess. I vacuumed, he said. And then in this strange, out-of-body experience, I heard my mother's voice coming out of my own mouth. You may have vacuumed, I said, but the floor is not clean. Mark Twain said, when I was 18, my parents didn't know a thing. When I turned 21, I was surprised to look back and see how much they had learned in just 3 short years. The Bible is chock full of that sort of parental wisdom. King Solomon is given credit for a lot of these sorts of sayings in the book of Proverbs, like this one in chapter 6. Go look at the ant, you lazy bones. Consider its ways and be wise. Without having any chief or officer or ruler, it prepares its food in summer and gathers its sustenance in harvest. So how long will you lie there, O lazy bones? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed warrior. The world of the Proverbs is built on the principle of cause and effect. There is an order to the universe. Certain actions have consequences. And if you watch closely enough, you can figure out the system. Figure out the rules of the game and you've got a chance to win. The world makes sense for the most part. Even people operate predictably most of the time. Know the rules of the game and make smart plays. That's wisdom. Proverbs 8 describes wisdom as a woman there at the beginning of all things. She says, "The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of long ago. Ages ago I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle in the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters might not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master worker, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always." She was there at the beginning, a master worker beside God. Together they shaped the chaos. They built order into the fabric of the universe. And now Lady Wisdom invites us to a banquet. Chapter 9. Wisdom has built her house with its 7 columns. She calls, "You that are simple, turn in here." To those without sense, she says, "Come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Lay aside immaturity and live. Walk in the way of the Spirit. Walk in the way of insight." So how do you come by this wisdom? How do you figure out the way things work? It's like my mom used to tell me, keep your mouth shut and your ears and eyes open and you just might learn something. Like the proverb about the ant, the wise make observations about the world around them. They look at the way things work, maybe in nature or between people. Like this one. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Wisdom is learned from experience, often the hard way. And wisdom is learned by listening to the experiences of those who have gone before. Most of the Proverbs are written by parents to their children, a mother who wants her son to make wise choices, a father who wants his kid to avoid the pitfalls of life. Proverbs come from all over, even some in the Bible are borrowed from older Egyptian wise men and women. That's like an invitation. We are invited to continue to seek out wisdom. We're encouraged to be ever watchful, ever observant, with our mouths shut and our ears open. The wise seek wisdom everywhere, open and often surprised by where it may be found, from children and misfits. Wisdom is concerned with the actual business of living, not just abstractions. But the Proverbs don't tell you exactly what to do in each situation. It's like one book said, they're not designed to be spoon-fed. They prick thought. Everybody has to discern to figure out for themselves when and how to apply them. And the Proverbs echo this. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. order is built into the universe by God. That cause and effect, action, consequence world is designed by the Almighty. But the living God is no mere watchmaker, content to sit back and let the universe go. The Proverbs describe God as an active agent at work in the world. I remember an old preacher saying, "This is God's universe, and God runs it God's way." Now, you may have a better way to run things, but you don't got a universe. And we who would live in God's world must reckon with him. The living God is the foundation of wisdom. In our story, King Solomon ascended to the throne of Israel, the new king trying to follow in his father's footsteps. David had left big shoes to fill. David had carved out the country, won great victories from the time he was a boy. David had been adored by the people and favored by God. David, the man after God's own heart. And now David is dead. And Solomon is the king, the youngest son with no experience, no battles under his belt, ascending to the throne not by popular demand but through political intrigues and assassinations by his supporters. Solomon is the new king. And the chair feels very big. The crown weighs heavy on his head. I hear him lying awake at night wondering, "What have I gotten myself into?" And the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I should give you." What a request. The Almighty God tells Solomon to ask for anything. And so Solomon asks for what lays heaviest on his heart. "O Lord, you have made me king in place of my father, even though I am only a little child, and I'm in the midst of your chosen people. I'm supposed to lead them. O God, give me wisdom. Please, give me an understanding mind so that I can govern your people. Give me a mind that can discern between good and evil, right and wrong. Please." So the story goes, it pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. And God said to him, "Indeed, I will give you wisdom. No one like you has been before, nor will anyone like you come after." A lot of times we look to God for the answer, for wisdom, for clarity. We want God to whisper to us in the night to tell us how to live. And Solomon's Proverbs tell us about wisdom that is learned by observation, watching the world around us, and listening. Solomon's story reminds us that both revelations are from God. Both the whispering in the night and the wisdom we learn by watching and listening. We seek the powerful, special revelation, whispers in the night from the Almighty, and that is right. But God's gift to Solomon is not the answer, not a promise that God will always send a prophet to tell the new king what to do. No, God's gift is wisdom, a mind that understands and discerns. And according to Solomon's Proverbs, that gift is extended to us. Lady Wisdom invites us to dine at her banquet. "The table is ready. Come," she says, "eat of my bread and live. Walk in the way of insight." It takes wisdom to make it in this world, wisdom to figure out what is right. There is order built into the fabric of the cosmos, and we can find it, take hold of it, and take control of our own destiny. That is the message of Proverbs. And that message is true most of the time. Wisdom accounts for 9/10 of life. 9/10, most of life, but not all of it. The race is not always to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, for time and chance come to them all. We make a mistake when we forget that. Order is built into the universe, but the powers of chaos are still at work. Terrible things happen to good people, and our proverbs fail us. I have seen suffering and grief for which there is no answer, for which there is no sense, no order, and there are no words to comfort the mother who has lost her child, the husband who has lost his wife. To one such as these, the words of the Proverbs may become biting and cruel, a mockery of pain. Woe to the one who, like Job's friends, tries to bring comfort by quoting the wisdom of the Proverbs. These are other voices, and in their presence we again do well to keep our mouths shut and our hearts open. Most of the time, the wisdom of the Proverbs is true, but sometimes the world fails to conform to the promised order. Sometimes the Proverbs fail us, and sometimes, well, remembering that too is wisdom. I remember talking to Cindy one night after getting off the phone with my folks. I'd called Dad for advice about the car, I think. I always do. I leaned over to Cindy and I said, "What am I going to do someday when they're gone?" When Cindy or I are sick, we still call Mom. My folks give me advice about everything from how to fix things to how to be a better husband, a better pastor, a better parent, a better person. I wonder now with my own kids, how did they figure it out? I don't know. Maybe we move somehow from being the ones asking the questions to the ones being asked without ever really figuring it out at all. Maybe we're always the ones asking. I feel in over my head so often. I find myself praying Solomon's prayer all the time. Oh God, give me wisdom. Give me an understanding mind, a mind that discerns, please. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Amen.